Our next speaker is Dr. Pam Clark, who is a professor at the University of Wyoming School of Nursing. I thought so. I mean, I knew you're a nurse, but I was just waiting. So Pam is our next speaker. So the project I'm going to talk about once it loads, is a community-based clinical prevention service. I want to introduce my colleague, Carol McNee, who is a co-author on this project, and acknowledge Marilyn Fisk, Kathy Moore, Judy Rennick, who were also on the project, and Sarah Campbell. The discussion of this concept of clinical prevention in the community, operationalized through home visits, to me was sort of the essence of public health nursing, and it was very exciting to me when I came to Wyoming as dean in 2003 to actually have the conversation initiated by a private business that was in charge of doing analyzing data for the state, to be talking about why don't we do more for high-risk families in the area of prevention and health promotion to save money. And myself as dean and also the dean of the College of Pharmacy were involved. And so I was very excited about it, but it was not a major part of my role then as dean. I am no longer dean, and so I'm having much more fun actually getting involved in the process. So I'm going to talk about the conceptual piece of the model and the initial findings with high-risk families. Yeah, this one?
Yeah,
no, here? Okay. I do have financial or disclosures. Carol and I are both consultants to this private company, Human Capital Management Services. And the other co-authors on the presentation are employed by the company. So we're going to talk about the health as human capital approach, the outcomes of the sub-project, which we called Healthy Families Succeed. And we did a pilot study, which was funded by the state, and then health policy implications and a little bit about a progress toward what we're hoping is a new health insurance model for the state. You're probably familiar with the Pareto principle, known as the 80-20 rule. And in business, they say that 80% of your sales come from 20% of your clients. And in healthcare, we say that 20% of the people use 80% of the cost. And actually, the data show that in Wyoming, that's actually true. So if you look at the first quintile, where we have 80% of the people, having almost the least cost, almost no cost, and the highest percentage in the fourth and fifth quintiles, the highest costs. And this is what kind of gave us the, and you can see medical, the green is the Medicaid, medical, and the Medicaid drug is the next most common. And it gave us the data we needed to go ahead and support kind of aiming this project at the high-risk families. So here you can see the low-risk and the high-risk group in terms of comparison, in terms of the number of providers per person. A huge difference between the low-risk families and the high-risk families. The number of tests per person, number of diagnoses, and medications. And so clearly focusing on the high-risk group in the context of the family was going to have the biggest impact. And one of our markers was medications. So we particularly wanted both that nurse pharmacist team to really, we were hoping to demonstrate savings in terms of medications. So the clinical prevention concepts, and I want to distinguish that versus case management, because some people talk about what we do and in the state, and they say, well, it's just case management, we're already doing that. And we say, no, it's not really case management, because number one, we focus on the family versus the managing an individual's case. Yes, we got into the home because of an individual that was considered high risk on a lot of medications, but from that point on, we focus on the family. The family determines their needs and priorities, and the clinician is there really to serve as a resource for the family and not direct the service. So we don't tell people what to do. We ask them where they want to go, what their needs are, and so forth. It's preventive versus medical. We don't provide any physical care. The nurses don't carry a blood pressure cuff or a thermometer or anything related. They're really there for providing whatever information the family wants. The nurse pharmacist team, the continuous primary access versus episodic care, and it can be concurrent with their whatever health care they're receiving. So our hypothesis was basically that if people get the proper information and support and assistance with their goals, whatever their goals are, they're more likely to be successful in terms of their goals. And ultimately, we felt that people would be healthier because they would be achieving their own goals, and that they would be likely to be more self-sufficient, capable of contributing to the workforce, and would demonstrate a decrease in costs. I have to say just a little bit, just a sentence, that it was a little bit difficult getting hiring nurses who'd had a background. We had a few that had backgrounds as nurse practitioners, to get them on board in terms of the concept. Nurses are used to telling people that their blood pressure is too high, and so we had to say, you know, we had to kind of really go over this kind of health as human capital concept, that this is going to be the family's goals. Do not have an idea ahead of time. Yes, you may know that they're, you know, uncontrolled diabetic. This is their health, their goals. It may not be themselves. And frequently it wasn't themselves that they were concerned about. It was a child or a husband or some other particular issue going on. I have to have them all on the screen at the same time. Why health is human capital? We talk about that people can maximize their own marketable human capital. We know that incentives drive human behavior, and people are most likely to do that which is less expensive or where they might benefit financially. And we know that in terms of healthcare, the physician is more likely to give you surgery because, in my opinion, because they get paid for it, versus talking about prevention, which doesn't pay. So frequently when you go in, when people go in, they get tests or they get treatments or they get something else that pays versus a lot of time spent on prevention. And then, of course, we believe that prevention is the best medicine, where they might not need the surgery. You can't buy your health since you already own it. And health has more to do with healthy behaviors and work compensation than access to health insurance. The concept of too much yet too little is basically what we've been talking about, the way our current healthcare system is designed. People get too much of the wrong kind of care. They get the expensive diagnostics, questionable treatments, and too little prevention or decision support. So on the left, I have a little trouble with left and right. On the left is our current model of our current system, with 1% of the dollars, 1% of the care getting focused on prevention or wellness. And what we'd like to see a more comprehensive health service model where 100% of the people would get prevention and wellness, and it would be really at the top of the model. So this is kind of conceptual so far, but the Wyoming Clinical Prevention Service began as a public-private partnership. Wyoming government was involved. This private company that managed the data, working with these the state government and the university to say, we need to test the model, we need to get high-risk families and be able to have nurses and pharmacists go to the home, help people with decision-making. And I have to say that all the nurses involved were master's prepared. So they were really very experienced, many, many 20-plus years of experience. The pharmacists, on the other hand, tended to be brand-new pharmacists. And they were very good with their technical skills about the drugs. But it was really the nurse that helped the families negotiate the care and help translate the information. And the nurses were, of course, more comfortable in the home than the pharmacists were. The team, we talk about the team approach as being really important, and I think one of the things we'd like to do long-term is really have a more sophisticated team with an experienced nurse and an experienced pharmacist to be able to help the families negotiate the system. This is the model of the key players. So we have Department of Family Services, Workforce Services, Education, Wyoming Department of Health, and Department of Corrections as being the lead agencies that provided the funding for the testing of the model. And we had to sell this concept in terms of economic principles because we wanted funding not just for the first provision of the intervention, but also for the longitudinal follow-up. And we have, I think, about 18 months worth of data at this point. This is the, it's not a very clear slide, but shows that of the more than 113,000 individuals receiving state assistance, about and two or more agencies simultaneously and eight or more medication, a substantial number of that group was job mobile. So then we had two clinical groups, intervention group and a control group. These were Medicaid recipients who used two or more state programs on 10 or more unique drugs per year. So that's not just a refill of a prescription, but a new prescription in the two counties at the bottom of the state so that we could conserve on our travel time. And we looked at the CDC health-related quality of life survey. We had an empowerment scale, and we looked at pre and post. We have 97 families enrolled in this study, high completion rate. You can see the participants, mostly women and children, about half with mental issues and psychotropics. But a remarkable thing on this slide to me is how little time it took. So in terms of the findings, the majority of the adults showed improvement in self-sufficiency through employment, education, increase in self-rating of health was one of the strongest findings from the study. And initially, at the one-year mark, the total cost decreased by $1,000 per person per year. I'm going to skip to the data so Carol can say a few words. This is the basically the model, kind of repeats what I said. And this is what we talk about as the path to self-sufficiency, where they start with health, skills to find a job growth, and career growth. And I'll let you do this last. So we're sort of mixing up two different sets of studies. One was a controlled study where we had a control and a study group, and then we also continued the study longitudinally and enrolled the control people in it. So we had sort of a mix and match of data here. But this bar graph is showing you looking only at the job mobile adult population. So some of the people in our study were long-term disability and other kinds of groups. So we were isolating out only the job mobile. And it's showing you their Medicaid costs the year before they began in the study and then the year after. And the study group is on your left, and the control group is on the right. And what you can see there is that there was a much bigger decrease amongst those adults in their overall costs and spending, which was what a state government is interested in. Again, we're more interested in health outcomes, but the state government was very interested in, so are you actually changing costs? This slide now instead looks at the kids, so we pulled out the kids, and here you'll notice that the study group actually started out lower. That was just by random happenstance, and they actually decreased very slightly, and we decided that probably was good because probably a lot of the expenses that were there for the kids were the preventative care kinds of expenses, not illness, although, again, they had to be involved in at least two state agencies, and they had to have multiple medications, so they weren't entirely healthy. The controls, on the other hand, had an increase. So I have to say in general that conceptually it's not always easy for public health nurses to think about overuse of care as risky behavior. And yet what we're really, a basis of this is saying that people who are using way too much care, who are going from multiple providers, taking multiple prescriptions, are probably at real risk in terms of health problems. And we need to help them better use the system and help them, and that may involve to begin with, doing some other kinds of things completely different from what we're doing. This one is a little counterintuitive. What we found was that the study group originally had, and this is now looking at the individuals who were, in fact, disabled on long-term care, other kinds of things, so no longer the work mobile adults. And the study group actually had started out at a lower level and then had some decrease. The control group started out higher, but also had a pretty major decrease. And all they were getting was the measures, and we have no real explanation for that particular difference. But the percentage decrease is different. Okay, this one shows the same model that Pam was showing you a minute ago, only now it's got the dollar amounts to it. So what we began to be able to say from the study was that we need to start with health and make sure that people have their health or have enough of what is they're managing their health so that they can move forward. And then we need to begin to look at jobs and job skills and building them. And that our second version, our second pilot built in a job skills training. We're in a third piece now with the state government where we're actually starting with the job skills, identifying those people who need the health and bringing them into the Healthy People, Healthy Families program. But not everybody does need the support of their health and health care. And that we need to really look at helping people as they move, that you can't get a family to self-sustainability until you get pretty far up and along that line. That's a family of four. And this last picture is just, this is sort of the model now that Health and Human Services is using to talk about this overall picture. This is a public health model. We're pretty comfortable with this to begin with, but within industry, within government, this is not necessarily so familiar, and we're really saying that our human capital, which are our skills, our motivation, our health, all depend on these multiple other pieces, our family, community services, law, all the different parts. And so we're trying to begin to address that whole picture as we look at models. Anything you want to add?
Our last presentation